Decision podcasts are brought to you by the New York Prosecutors Training Institute. Find this and other decisions at NIPTI Law. www.nipti.org/law.
People v. Baez decided on April 25, 2024. Canataro, J. Defendant Melvin Baez was convicted after a non-jury trial of possessing a quantity of cocaine. The sole question on appeal is whether the people laid a legally sufficient foundation for admission of the drugs into evidence. We agree with the courts below that the people's showing established a legally adequate chain of custody and provided reasonable assurances of the identity and unchanged condition of the evidence. 1. At approximately 11 p.m. on February 4, 2014, NIPT officers Mark Lewis and Shui Lin observed defendant using his cell phone while driving and conducted a traffic stop. See Vehicle and Traffic Law Section 1225-1. When defendant rolled down his window to speak with the officers, Officer Lewis observed that defendant had bloodshot eyes and slurred speech, and both officers smelled marijuana in the car. The officers asked defendant to step out of his vehicle and arrested him, at which point Officer Lewis conducted a search for weapons and contraband. As Officer Lewis placed his hand inside the pocket of defendant's jacket, defendant made a jerking motion and a clear plastic bag with a white substance inside fell to the ground. Defendant stomped on the bag and dragged it with his foot before being moved away by Officer Lewis. Officer Lin retrieved the bag, which he testified had been torn. To keep the contents of the bag safe while in transit to the station, Officer Lin placed the bag inside a latex glove and tied the glove shut. When Officer Lin arrived at the station, she placed the latex glove and its contents inside a narcotics envelope used to voucher and safeguard drugs. Because she had to return to patrol and was not permitted to keep the evidence with her, she left the envelope on a desk inside an office at the police station and told Officer Lewis where to find it. She testified that the only other person in the office at the time was an administrative officer tasked with watching evidence recovered by other officers during arrests. Early the next morning, Officer Lewis found the narcotics envelope where Officer Lin had told him to look for it inside the station. According to Officer Lewis, the envelope contained both the latex glove, which he recalled Officer Lin using to secure the evidence, and the plastic bag recovered from defendant. Inside the plastic bag was a white substance and a smaller plastic bag containing 45 even smaller Ziploc packets. Officer Lewis separated the bag holding the 45 Ziploc packets from the larger bag and photographed the two items of evidence. Officer Lewis then weighed all the evidence by placing everything together on one uncalibrated scale. After photographing and weighing the evidence, Officer Lewis placed the evidence back inside a manila narcotics envelope and completed a voucher invoice. He then sealed the envelope and invoice inside a plastic security envelope. The narcotics envelope, voucher invoice, and security envelope each had unique identification numbers. The voucher invoice indicated that the evidence consisted of two items with the same description, alleged crack cocaine, color white, packaged in, clear plastic bag, form rock, 9 grams in total. Officer Lewis placed the security envelope inside a safe at the station. Once inside, the evidence could only be retrieved by an officer assigned to transport the evidence to a NIP laboratory. The people also called Yanitza Osorio, a criminologist from the NIP laboratory who analyzed the white substance 3 days after defendant's arrest. Osorio testified that when she received the security envelope, its seals were intact and it contained no visible damage. When she opened the contents of the manila narcotics envelope inside, she found a clear plastic bag containing loose solid material and a second item, which was one clear plastic Ziploc bag containing 45 clear plastic Ziploc bags containing solid material residue. Osorio filled out a discrepancy form because the voucher invoice appeared to describe two identical bags of alleged crack cocaine. She did not notice any rips in the plastic bags. Osorio weighed the white substance in the first bag and determined it was 5.5535 grams of cocaine. She did not test the residue in the second item containing the 45 Ziploc packets. Osorio then resealed the evidence and completed her report. The identification numbers listed in the report match those used by Officer Lewis. At the conclusion of the people's case, defendant filed a written motion to dismiss the indictment, arguing that the cocaine was inadmissible because the people failed to establish a complete chain of custody and there were no reasonable assurances that the substance examined by Osorio and introduced at trial was authentic. After permitting defendant to supplement his written papers with an oral statement on the record, Supreme Court denied defendant's motion. As relevant here, the court found defendant guilty of criminal possession of a controlled substance in the fourth degree, Penal Law Section 220.91, while acquitting him of several other charges. Defendant appealed, and the appellate division unanimously affirmed, holding that the evidence was legally sufficient to establish the chain of custody of the cocaine and provided reasonable assurances of the identity and unchanged condition of the evidence. A judge of this court granted defendant leave to appeal. We now affirm. 2. Before a court will admit into evidence an object allegedly taken from a defendant or found at the scene of a crime, the people must first lay a foundation that the object is the one recovered and that its condition is substantially unchanged. People v. Connolly, Accord People v. Julian. In the case of a fungible item, such as a package of white powder, a sufficient foundation is provided when all those who have handled the item identify it and testify to its custody and unchanged condition. Julian, quoting Connolly, "We have cautioned that this chain of custody requirement should not be extended to unreasonable limits. See also People v. L.I. In addition, gaps in the chain of custody may be excused when circumstances provide reasonable assurances of the identity and unchanged condition of the evidence. Such gaps go to the weight of the evidence, not its admissibility." People v. Hawkins, People v. Hawkins, People v. Hawkins. In keeping with the purpose and function of the chain of custody approach, the primary focus of the reasonable assurances inquiry is on whether, during the gap in the chain of custody, some unknown party, i.e., an individual not called for questioning and assessment, could have caused a material and prejudicial change in the condition or nature of the evidence. Julian C. Connolly, the fact that the abiendranerates of the evidence, Julian C. Udisamai, here, the people called every individual known to have handled the evidence from the time of its seizure to trial, other than those officers who merely transported the evidence in sealed packaging between locations, C. Connolly, rejecting the notion that when an exhibit has been mailed for analysis, each postal employee who handled the item should be considered a necessary link. Defendant argues that a gap in the custodial chain existed between the time the evidence was left at the police station by Officer Lynn and the time it was picked up by Officer Lewis. But even accepting that there was a short period of time during which the evidence was not fully sealed or attended by a testifying witness, the People's Foundation was sufficient to provide reasonable assurances of the identity and unchanged nature of the evidence. Julian drugs properly admitted despite People's failure to account for their date, day location over a three-year period. Specifically, the record indicates that the gap spanned, at most, only a few hours overnight, and at all times, the drugs apparently remained safely under police control in an identifiable location at a precinct station, E. Julian. Officer Lynn testified that she placed the evidence inside an envelope used to voucher drugs, and that the only other person in the office at the time was an administrative officer who was tasked with safeguarding such evidence. In leaving the evidence at the station to resume her patrol, Officer Lynn followed a procedure intended to reduce opportunities for error and misconduct, cf. Pearson, see also Julian. When Officer Lewis arrived to voucher the evidence, the drugs were found precisely where they were supposed to be, see Julian. He testified that the envelope contained not only the white substance and other materials recovered from defendant's pocket, but also the latex glove he recalled Officer Lynn using at the scene. These circumstances reduced the risk that the condition of the evidence changed or that it was handled by someone not called as a witness during the brief period in which it was left at the station. Defendant argues that no reasonable assurances exist to bridge the gap in the chain of custody because there are discrepancies in how the evidence was described at various points between its recovery and trial. Several courts have held that gaps in a custodial chain will not be excused where there are clear and material discrepancies in the record regarding the condition, appearance, or handling of contraband that are never explained by the prosecution, leaving no reasonable assurance that the evidence was not altered during the gap in custody. C.E.B. Montoya, People v. Espino, People v. Espino, People v. Espino, People v. Montoya. But if a gap is brief and logical explanations for the inconsistencies are provided, or can reasonably be inferred from the surrounding circumstances, such discrepancies merely raise weight and credibility issues for the jury to resolve in assessing whether the people met their ultimate burden of establishing proof of guilt beyond reasonable doubt. C.E. People v. Cimento, People v. Well, Well P.A.P. Op. Cimento, People v. Such was the case here. The most troubling discrepancies in the record relate to the descriptions of the evidence in the voucher invoice and felony complaint. But Officer Lewis was responsible for both documents and was capably cross-examined by defendant. Officer Lewis identified the evidence as items recovered from defendant at the scene. He admitted that the felony complaint misdescribed those items. He further explained that, when typing out the voucher invoice, his intent was to convey that the narcotics envelope contained alleged crack cocaine in two plastic bags with a combined weight of 9 grams, which he measured by placing everything together on an uncalibrated scale. In contrast, criminologist Osorio testified that she weighed only the white substance in the larger of the two bags, C. Lanza, People v. Martinez. The photograph taken by Officer Lewis corroborates both witnesses' trial testimony concerning the items included in the narcotics envelope, and there was no gap in the custodial chain or evidence of tampering between when Officer Lewis took the photograph and sealed the evidence and when Osorio took possession of that still-sealed package with its 3 unique identification numbers. Defendant also focuses on Osorio's testimony that she did not see or write in her worksheet that there were rips in the plastic bags recovered from defendant, which he characterizes as irreconcilable with Officer Lynn's testimony about the torn condition of the larger bag. Defendant ignores that the bags were admitted into evidence at trial, and the fact finder was expressly encouraged to examine them to confirm Officer Lynn's testimony. If the larger bag was torn in some way, Osorio's mere failure to notice that defect would not support an inference of tampering. Because the bag is not part of the record on appeal, it is impossible to discern the existence or extent of any discrepancy, let alone conclude that it rendered the drugs inadmissible. In making these points, we do not condone the seemingly careless manner in which the items were described, particularly in the official records. Imprecision and inaccuracy in police paperwork not only impede the prosecution of crime, they erode public confidence in law enforcement and lend credence to allegations of incompetence and misconduct. Nonetheless, it is a fundamental principle of our justice system that fact finders determine credibility and decide which inferences to draw from conflicting evidence based on their direct examination of the physical evidence and observations of each witness's demeanor and tone, critical inputs unavailable to us on this appellate record. At the admissibility stage, the court's role is that of gatekeeper. The task is merely to assess whether the judge or jury, acting as fact finder, has been provided sufficient evidence to support a factual conclusion that the item in question is what the people claim, e. Julian. This court, moreover, is jurisdictionally prohibited from making factual findings or engaging in weight of the evidence review. Our authority extends only to deciding questions of law, People v. Bleakley. In this case, a legally adequate foundation was provided by the people's chain of custody showing. Defendant's problem is not with the fact that the evidence was left overnight at a police station, or with any risks specific to that gap. It is with the credibility of the people's witnesses and the purportedly insufficient weight accorded the discrepancies. It was within the province of the fact finder to attribute those discrepancies to mistake, including faulty observation, recollection, or recording, rather than to draw the more cynical inference of a conspiracy against defendant. See People v. Tavares, People v. Siriaco, People v. Sario, People v. De Fassels, People v. Figuero, People v. Fowl, Pio Briao, People v. Bureau, People v. Opiatl, Piel. The evidence was therefore properly admitted. Accordingly, the order of the appellate division, insofar as appealed from, should be affirmed. Opinion by Judge Canataro. Judges Garcia, Singas, Troutman, and Halligan concur. Judge Rivera dissents in an opinion in which Chief Judge Wilson concurs.
Decision podcasts are brought to you by the New York Prosecutors Training Institute. Find this and other decisions at NIPT Law. www.nipt.org/law.